All right, let's get started with Thomas and Joop.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Thomas. Thank you. I'm working for the Jülich Supercomputing Center, where we are hosting the first exascale system of Europe. And if you're one of the people collecting stickers, I might have something for you. And it's my first time at FOSDEM, and today I'm going to talk about Joop, which is an environment to run systematic benchmarks and scientific workflows. So benchmarks, I would say, is a kind of subcategory of workflows. So we are executing some workflows in a very systematic way with several dependent steps. And this is usually done by different kind of user groups. For example, the system admins, they use it for procurements to ensure the stability of the system, or the support staff to detect changes in the behavior of the system, or to reproduce problems that are reported by users, or the users themselves to let them run their software, test their functionalities, or run the scientific use cases in the end. And one can do this in different ways, gooder or better and worse ones, and manual, so you have nothing scripted, you do everything by hand, you haven't barely anything documented, you are running into problems like overwriting your own data in the worst case, so that's probably not the best way to do it. Then you have something semi-scripted, very benchmark specific. This is also hard to port and to give to your colleague, and he has to think what you thought, how the script should work like, so there's no standard at all. And then there are more generic tools for configuring benchmarks, and this is where Joop comes into the game. Let's start with a little bit of history. So I haven't been in HPC for so long, but the colleagues who have started with Joop, they told me it has started around 2004 with the procurement of a big system we had at this time, and this was purely Perl-based. And this has been re-implemented in 2014 with Python, and we are currently having the version 2.7.1. And a little bit more about the history, Joop has been the chosen framework for European benchmarking already since the first years it was published in Deja and in the praise preparatory phase and in the several implementation phases. And also it has been used in several projects nationally and international. Here's a few selection of these logos. You might recognize one or the other, but this list is by far not complete. So what's Joop actually? It's a generic, lightweight, configurable environment to run, monitor, and analyze application execution in a systematic way. What it means will hopefully get more clear in the following slides. And I've mentioned a few use cases already for it. There are also parameter studies, production scenarios, and more. We publish it at open source. It's available on GitHub, but also on other ways, which I will come to later. And a few key concepts, which I will explain in the following slides, is the workflow creation based on dependent steps and parameter expansion, pattern substitution and files. We create a generic directory structure to avoid overwriting of data and keep doing things automatically. So how would a generic basic workflow look like? You have your data, you have your application, your source codes, but what you would have to provide is Joop configuration file. You either program it in XML or in YAML. I will have this talk based on XML, but don't be afraid of it. There's also YAML, and if you prefer that one. And so it's also not free lunch, so you have to provide this file, but once you have it, it's standardized, and basically it's once you understood Joop, you might understand all the other benchmarks that are implemented in Joop. So in this example, we have configured our benchmark such that it should have a first compile step, and this should create two work packages. One, it should compile the sources with O1, and the second one with O3. And we would like to have a follow-up step that depends on the compile, and we run a scaling experiment for each of the executables. We would like to see how it performs on 2, 4, and 8,000 CPUs. And then we want to extract some data from the logs. And in this example, we are interested in the runtime. And we provide this either in a table or in a database. So this is the most basic workflow that is implemented in Joop. But I will, in the following slides, I will go a little bit more into detail how we do this. So this can be either in YAML or in XML. Here it's in XML. And you define parameters, give them a name, and the values. Here it's like a 1 and a 3. And if you have a comma-separate list, Joop makes sure that where you use this parameter, it creates two work packages, so one directory for each of these pipelines that Joop is going to execute. And if you have another parameter, also with a comma-separate list, Joop spans out the tree even further. So just by adding another comma and another value, you can easily scale it up to more compile options, more execution options, or whatever your workflow is looking like. And the file substitution is another key feature. We define so-called subs, and there we define a unique pattern or a non-unique pattern. Joop will search for it in the file that you give to it and replace it either by one of the values you have in your parameters here defined or by a static string, for example. And then it replaces the values in a file. So you could think about to have a template of a JobScript, and you want to do the scaling experiment, and Joop creates 3, 4, 5, or how many job scripts you want just by replacing the values in this template. The next one was the unique directory structure. So every time you run Joop run with your benchmark file, Joop will create a subdirectory to prevent that you overwrite your previous runs, because you want to have them reproducible, you want to have them documented, and you might want to look into them also at a later point. So we run Joop run and we get a new ID, and in every of these IDs you see this structure. So you have some internal configuration files which we can ignore at this place point, and on the top some directories. Each directory is one work package, for example the compile with the O1, the compile with the O3, and the different executions, so they don't interfere with each other. And within those directories there's more structure, and at the end there's where the magic happens, some log files and probably your source code, your executables, further scripts, or whatever you want Joop to do with your data. I will guide you through this example script. I hope it's not too small. Let's start here at the bottom. So we define a step, and all the rest is just configuration or definition of things that Joop should do, but the actual magic, it happens in the step itself. So we have created a step compile, and on the right side you will see what Joop is doing with it. So the first thing that Joop does, it uses the compile set. The compile set is defined here, and we define two parameters. First is exec name with a string myexe, and we have another parameter with the comma separate list that we have seen already. So what Joop does, it recognizes it's a comma separate list. This comma can be also replaced by any other arbitrary sign if you have the comma in your strings or so that you want to use. So Joop creates two directories, two work packages, one with the O1 and the other one with the O3. So we have gone through these parameter sets that we have used, and then the next thing that Joop is executing is using the sources. The sources is a file set, and this can be used to link, to copy some data, and in this case it copies all the data that is in the finds in the SRC directory, and these are your sources, your CPP files or something, and the template makefile.in. And it copies it in both of its work packages because it knows it has created these work packages. So we are done with the file set. The next thing, we use the compile sub, and that's the substitution set that I've mentioned already before. So we define a file where Joop should look for patterns, and we can define an output file. And in this case, it's the input file is makefile.in, which we have already in our directories. Joop will find it, and it will create a new file where it replaces everything that is defined in the following lines. And it can be the same if you want to override it, but here we just want to create a new file, and here we search for hash, procname hash, and we replace it with the value that's stored in this parameter here. And we end up with a makefile in both directories. And the last thing that has to be done in the step is we don't use anything, but we execute something. This is marked with the do, and the do's are executing shell comments, like if you would do it on the comment line. And here we run our make comments with an argument that gets its value from the parameter here. So in this case, we end up with an executable compiled with -01, and in this case with 03. So, and this was the last thing we had to do in the JUPES to do in the compile step. So we have our first executables, two executables compiled. And then JUPE will continue. It finds another step, and the step depends on the compile step. So JUPE knows that for the compile step, we have already two work packages. So it will also create one directory, at least one directory per each compile. And then JUPE also knows that this directory should be linked to the 01 version, and this directory should be linked to the 03 version, so that if we execute something here, JUPE can go via this symbolic link into this directory and execute the executable that we have compiled there. And there's more things. The script is not complete. We want to can analyze things. We can do much more, but this is really the very basic structure with some of the key components that, that JUPE has. Also a few comment line arguments here. We can execute the script by JUPE run on the comment line, either the XML script or the YAML. The functionalities are like 99.9% the same, just a little bit different than the YAML version on a very specific keyword, but that's not worth mentioning. And we can also query previous runs. So if we want to know which parameters has been set or whatever kind of information JUPE knows, we can query it from the comment line even after a benchmark has been run or while the benchmark is running. We have the comment line help to access the glossary and many more comment line options. So I hope until now we have got a bit of an overview what JUPE can do and how it does it. Now I would like to go into a few more use case examples that we have, especially at JSC. And I've already mentioned that we are hosting the exascale system, Jupiter, and in the procurement process, we had to come up with a big list of benchmarks. Like people who are involved in procurements, they might have done similar things. So what we did, we integrated several application and synthetic benchmarks in JUPE and defined them for different execution targets like the CPU, the GPU, or both together. And yeah, we published this benchmark suite on GitHub. So if you want to get started with JUPE, or if you're using JUPE already, this might be a nice place to look at because there are some recipes that you can use. So it's nice to have this benchmark suite, but we also want to make use of it. So we use this benchmark suite to, in a continuous benchmarking environment, to get insights into system health. What do I mean with that? So we have written CI scripts. A component like XRCB that we use, but you can do it also without it. Then we go via Jacama on our HPC systems, and there we execute all the JUPE scripts that we have. We extract the information that we want from this particular example, and we push them back, in this case at a CSV. And we use another software at JSC, which is called LLView, which we use for usually for system monitoring and reporting also of jobs, but it has also the capability to flexibly and generically plot or visualize data. You can do this also in other ways, but looking at CSV files it's very hard to get some insights, so we want to have some more interactive visualization of the data that we get from running these benchmarks continuously. So I will give a few examples here. So we have then our list of benchmarks. We see some status of it, how they performed. And then we can click on the individual benchmarks. Here we look at HPCG on a special system at JSC. And everything that you see here, like the table and the plots, is highly configurable. So it's not, you will see this also in the following up plots. It's not depending on any metrics or so. It's completely configurable. So what we see here is, for example, the gigaflops from the HPCG on the right side, the runtime on the x-axis, the time from like mid-December, beginning of December until like last week. And if we hover over the graphs, we even get more data. We call them annotations. And we can, for example, see which job ID has been used to get this data from, or any other kind of data that you would have available in your benchmarks. We could visualize here. Same for another kind of benchmark. This is the stream. Here we don't show gigaflops, but we have the bandwidth on the left and on the right. And the last one is we cannot only show time series on the x-axis, but also more scaling plots, like also from the stream benchmark. And here we scale over the threads per task, for example. So this is how we use our benchmark suite to get also some continuous insights into our systems. But that's about the benchmarking side. We also use Joupe for scientific workflows, complex ones. And here I brought you one from the energy system modeling fields. Usually the state of the art is there to run the dozens of scenarios to see how the, to analyze or evaluate scenarios in the future. So the further you go in the future, the bigger the uncertainty space gets. And usually the more scenarios you need to really find the optimal scenario for a future case. But the state of the art is that they only run a dozens. And what we did, we use HPC and run more than 11,000, which is quite a lot more than it's state of the art in that field. And we did this for the German power system. And where is Joupe coming into the place here? I'm not going into the details here of this workflow, but this should just indicate that we have many different kind of data formats and different kind of applications, and Joupe orchestrate them all off and runs them on HPC. And this study has been recently published right before Christmas in Nature Communications with several project partners. Okay, so now I hope you got a first impression how you can implement Joupe and what Joupe can be used for. I would like to also get a bit more in the software side of things. So what's the current status? The main development is still done in an internal GitLab due to some historical reasons. We started long time ago in SVN, then we moved to GitLab, and at some point we opened also a repository at GitHub, but the transition is still ongoing. And we have some open issues internally, but they are really almost all feature requests. And these feature requests usually do not reach us by GitHub or issues. They usually the interested people reach out to us as a developers directly. That's why you don't see very much activity on GitHub there. And the last point is more, maybe someone can help me here with that. We have tried to publish Joupe on PyPy, but they claim Joupe as a prohibited name. So if you know someone from PyPy, we have opened the issue a few years ago, but there's not much movement there. And what are we working on currently? We are actively working on the version 3. So it's almost a bit more than 10 years after we have done the change from version 1 to 2. And here we would like to change some internal status files into a database to increase or improve the data persistency, consistency, and these things, and also to gain more speed up that we need to in the exascale era. And also some features, new features. For example, Joupe can then not only push data into a database or in plain text, but it can also use the matplotlib to plot directly some figures, and we have some more things to come up there. Then I guess like all of the other projects, we also want to extend and improve our Docker and testing, but we are not doing that bad with it, I would say, but still there's always room for improvements, and of course, keep implementing new features that are requested from interested people. And as I've mentioned, the transition to GitHub is ongoing. We still think about how we do this in a best way, but that's also something we are actively looking into it. Then about the availability of Joupe, we have it as a tarball on GitHub. You can even use it, install it via EasyBuild or Spark. We have an online documentation, advanced beginner tutorial, FAQ glossary, and more on this webpage. You can contact the JSC developers by this email address. It's all on the webpage, or we also look into GitHub if you open something there. So, and I think that's it already. Thank you for your attention. I hope you got inspired to use Joop if you're not yet doing it. And if you want to get in touch with us, just reach out to me here or at any time in the future. Thank you. This might, the question was whether we test all the Python versions, and we don't do this actively. I think this might not be up to date on the docu. Yeah, I would need to look into this. What's the latest version we need and what we are testing right now? I cannot say this for sure. Sorry. The question is, how do you make your benchmarks portable across systems? You need to get access to the systems and implement it into the Joop script. So Joop doesn't know anything about the system unless you tell it about it. So we can use something that's called tagging, for example. You can define, if you want to use the Intel compiler, you can create a parameter that runs ICC, for example, or you run a have a parameter with the name GCC, and then it calls GCC, and you give it a tag, and depending on these tags, you can use them on the command line, and then you have it flexible to decide which kind of compiler you use or what kind of architecture you use, but you need to tell Joop how it should use the architecture. So Joop is generic, but you need to tell Joop what it should do. Does this answer? So we ship something that we call a platform XML. This is a generic template of parameters and settings that we use, for example, for Slurm, but we also have it for other workload managers, and with those you can provide generic files that can be used. You can include Joop descriptions into different benchmarks, and I think where this mechanism you could provide different kind of configurations for individual systems and then tell Joop which one it should use for the current execution that you're aiming for. We are doing it in a way that the question was how we run our benchmarks, whether we create a reservation before or we run them in another way. And what we do, we create sbatch Slurm scripts and tell Joop, okay, sbatch and then your script, and we wait until there are free nodes, so we don't block our general use system just for our benchmarking purposes unless it's really necessary. So we use the regular scheduling of Slurm, and this is how we let our benchmarks run. The question was how we can use different kind of build systems. So Joop doesn't know anything about easy build, Spark. If your application uses Python, you can just run Python something. If you have a compile language, you need to tell Joop how to compile it. Either you configure CMake or any other kind of build system you have. So you need to tell Joop how you want to have your application compiled. And Joop doesn't know it, but you can tell it, and Joop can do quite a lot, or almost everything that you can do on the command line. So you basically put what you do on the command line into Joop, and then you have it kind of standardized. And if you give this script to a friend, a colleague, if they know the structure of Joop, they can get very fast started with understanding what you have been doing there. Uh, The question is whether Joop can access executables that are installed on a different path. Yes, if you tell Joop where to find it. Yes, yes. You just can, when you do it on the comment line, it's the same that if you would do it in Joop. You just need to tell it where to find data. And I think I get a sign that my time is up.
One more?
The question is whether Joop can access environment variables and how it handles the parameters internally.
Does it create different build structures for each of those so that when I'm scanning the outputs of all of them, I can effectively say, when I have this environment variable set, I get this set. I didn't find enough flexibility with it when I tried it, but it was many years ago. So.
I'm not sure if we have really changed on this, but I would say Joop can do this because Joop can read environment variables, and depending on the value of the environment variable, it creates it can create its internal structure. Joop can do it when you tell Joop to do it. So Joop, if you don't give the information to Joop, Joop doesn't know it. Or if you tell Joop where to find this information, then Joop can also grab it and put it into the output. Yes, the question was whether one can use one compile step and reuse it for multiple executions, yes. There's the full flexibility, I would claim there. The time is now really up, yeah. Thank you.